Ukraine says its forces have liberated another village previously under Russian control.
The representative of the president's office, Mr. Rostovich, also mentioned that there are other places that probably general staff will also report on.
Plus, a new U.S. intelligence report says Russia may be purchasing ammunition from North Korea.
The turn to the isolated state of North Korea demonstrates the Russian military continues to suffer from severe supply shortages due in part to export controls and sanctions.
And later in the program, how a love for heavy metal music is helping to raise funds for Ukraine. Today is Tuesday, September 6th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. Ukrainian forces continued their push in the nation's south, with government officials saying that troops have liberated another village that was previously occupied by Russian troops. Anna Chernikova joins us from Kyiv.
Yeah, well, we receive a lot of information that counteroffensive is actually very active, as it is called here. So officials are trying, you know, to highlight that this is counteroffensive actions which are going on. And according to all the reports that we have, both from the Ukrainian authorities, military authorities, and from the international experts and the Institute for the Study of War as well, we see that these actions are quite active. And Ukrainian general staff is trying not to comment too much on this situation, to keep it more or less secret, but still we receive confirmations on certain liberations. And yesterday it was confirmed that the village of Visokopilia was liberated, and today we have also confirmation that the village of Olhino, which is neighboring village to the previous one, was also liberated. The representative of the president's office, Mr. Rostovich, also mentioned that there are other places that probably general staff will also report on, but for the moment they are not announced. But apparently there are more villages which were actually back to the Ukrainian control. But again, this we cannot confirm for the moment. So we know that Ukrainian forces continue to very targeted attacks, and they continue to fire control the logistics routes that enables Russian forces to actually proceed with their actions. So for the moment, we're just waiting and continue to keep an eye on what's going on there.
And as more information is declassified and made available, we'll certainly contact you for that. But I also wanted to turn our attention to the Donbass and Kharkiv, which has been an area of intense fighting really since the beginning of the conflict back in February. And I believe that there's some updates on some of the Ukrainian military operations in that region.
Yes, actually, very active also shelling and fightings are happening around Kharkiv region and around the city of Kharkiv itself, because it is very close to the border with Russia, and Russian forces are actively shelling the city. And today we have confirmation, actually yesterday in the evening, President Zelensky confirmed this and announced that Ukrainian forces managed to destroy Russian warhouse with S-300 missiles. These are very missiles which are used for Kharkiv attacks, which were used by Russian forces for Kharkiv attacks. And this is quite a huge announcement, because for the past couple of weeks we see very intensifying shelling of the city of Kharkiv, and in particularly the central parts of the city, and pretty much the main target is residential areas. And despite this announcement by President Zelensky, today in the morning it was another shelling of Kharkiv of the city of Kharkiv, and again the central part, and again residential area. And for the moment, we know that very bad damages were at one of the buildings, where three entrances to the residential buildings were actually destroyed. It was a direct hit by a Russian missile, and according to the officials to Kharkiv officials, three people, two women and one man, have been already rescued from under the rubbles of the building. But rescue operation is going on, and unfortunately, this hit happened at around 9 o'clock in the morning, and a lot of people were actually there inside the building. So we're waiting until we have final information, because information about the victim is being clarified. And then in addition, almost at the same time, it was another hit in the central part of the city, and administrative building was damaged, but we don't have any information about the victims for the moment.
Thanks for that information, Anna. Lastly, I want to turn our attention to the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant and its neighboring city of Enerhodar. On Tuesday, both Russia and Ukraine renewed their accusations that each side is shelling the area. But what is being reported, and what do we know?
We hear about the fresh shelling and a huge explosion in the city of Enerhodar. This was confirmed by the head of Enerhodar, Ukrainian head, of the city. And also Russian side also confirmed the explosions. But Russian side said that there were a couple of explosions. According to Ukrainian authorities, there was one. But again, we cannot verify this information independently. Anyways, the fact that explosion happened was confirmed by both sides, and due to this explosion, it was a power cut and water supply cut in the town. So for the moment, unfortunately, it's impossible to confirm either there are any additional risks for the operation of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant due to this blackout, but we will be waiting for the further confirmations and official report on that later on.
From Kyiv, Ukraine, reporter Anna Chernikova. Anna, thank you very much for your update today.
Thank you, Steve.
At the afternoon United Nations Security Council meeting, the International Atomic Energy Agency is expected to brief members on its initial findings after traveling to the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. IAEA Chief Rafael Grossi led the mission last week, and he is expected to brief the council. Russia and Ukraine have for weeks accused one another of endangering its safety and that of all of Europe by shelling the site and its surrounding areas. But until now, no independent third party has been able to establish who has inflicted what damage on the plant. The mission's report was released ahead of the meeting, saying the situation at the plant is unprecedented and that a nuclear accident could have serious impacts within the country and beyond its borders. The meeting is scheduled to take place after our recording deadline, so we'll have updates on the session on our webpage, voanews.com/flashpoint. The U.S. says Russia may be buying rockets and artillery parts from North Korea. From the Associated Press, Charles de Ledesma reports.
Newly downgraded U.S. intelligence suggests Moscow is pursuing millions of rockets and artillery shells from North Korea for its ongoing fight in Ukraine. An official who spoke on the condition of anonymity says to turn to the isolated state of North Korea demonstrates the Russian military continues to suffer from severe supply shortages due in part to export controls and sanctions. The findings come after the Biden administration recently confirmed the Russian military had taken delivery of Iranian-manufactured drones for use on the battlefield in Ukraine. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine has now driven Moscow and Beijing closer. That's according to a new report that warns of the possibility of Russia and China supporting each other in any future conflict. Henry Ridgewell has that story.
Russia is this month hosting the Vostok 22 military exercises in the east of the country. 15 countries are taking part, and China is Russia's guest of honor. The drills have been broadcast on state television in both countries. Rear Admiral Valery Kazakov of Russia's Pacific Fleet was pictured on Russian state television, saying the practical interaction between the Russian Navy and the Navy of the Chinese People's Liberation Army has reached a new level in terms of quality. This ensures global and regional stability and security. China and Russia do not yet have a formal military alliance, but share deepening military ties, according to a report from the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. Arms sales are also a vital part of the relationship. But there are difficulties, says Bonnie Lin, one of the authors of the report.
China imports about 70% of its total arms from Russia. But by the mid-2000s, China began focusing more on domestic production of its arms, so less reliant on Russia. At the same time, Russia became more concerned about Chinese theft of its technology. And more recently, in the past couple of years, most of China's imports from Russia on the arms sales side have been to support its aircraft programs.
China has tacitly supported Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Again, Bonnie Lin.
Beijing is doing quite a bit of mirror imaging between what it views as the problems that Russia faced dealing with the West and NATO, and the problems that Beijing faces right now dealing with the United States and our closest allies and partners in the Indo-Pacific.
The report cautions that the Ukraine conflict has driven Russia and China closer.
I'm not saying that, for example, Russia would put boots on the ground in a China conflict with one of its neighbors, but it could provide other forms of support, including intelligence, including even political support.
The report says China's military capabilities are catching up with or surpassing those of Russia. The Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine has stalled. The report authors say a Russian failure there could lead Beijing to reevaluate its military relationship with Moscow. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. Now, for analysis on what this may mean for Russia and its foreign policy, I spoke with Texas Christian University political science professor Ralph Carter. Now, Carter is not only an expert on Russia, but also North Korea, so that's where we began our conversation.
I think the fact that Russia's had to turn to Iran for drones and North Korea for artillery ammunition and those kinds of stories are a real shocking illustration of the poor state of the Russian military arsenal. The fact that they don't have the high technology drones sufficient to meet their needs because they either never had them or they've been shot down by the Ukrainians. And then the Russian approach to ground warfare has always emphasized artillery. So you would assume they would have, you know, multitudes of rounds in storage ready for use, and apparently they're running out, which shows how much they've pummeled the Ukrainians, but at the same time been unsuccessful in advancing.
Ralph, I want to focus for just a moment on this new piece of information from the United States intelligence community about Russia seeking to acquire munition from North Korea. If we go back to the middle of the 20th century, the late 1940s into the 1950s, when Kim Il-sung, the leader of North Korea, looked to Russia for weapons in his bid to take over the Korean Peninsula. Now, fast forward, we're in the 21st century. After 6 months of war, what does it say to you that here you have Vladimir Putin, the leader of the Russian Federation, looking to Kim Il-sung's grandson, Kim Jong-il, for weapons and munition?
It's a sign of how diminished a stature Russia has on the world stage now. The fact that they look weak by being unable to defeat Ukraine so far, certainly the military weaknesses they've displayed, the tactical weaknesses they've displayed are shocking. But now to have to depend on a country like North Korea for ammunition is a sign of a logistics problem that is just enormous. It's amazing to me how bad the Russians are looking when I grew up with them as a superpower.
So if we take a look at the messaging from the Kremlin, it has increased the amount of misinformation and disinformation that it is putting out in regards to how the war in Ukraine is really going. So moving forward, what do you perhaps see as some of the messaging coming from Putin and the Kremlin that will attempt to change the narrative?
Well, he's already kind of tried to do that by shifting his narrative in domestic audiences to the idea of solidifying and consolidating a land bridge between the Donbass region and then now further down the coast to Crimea and past it to Kherson and maybe even if he could pull it off Odessa. But that would incorporate a lot of native Russian speakers in Ukraine, and he could call that a victory if people ignored his other earlier protestations about what the Russian goals really were.
And one last question. Liz Truss formally became the Prime Minister of Britain on Tuesday. She was the Foreign Minister under her predecessor, Boris Johnson, who was an avid supporter of Ukraine. And she has continuously upheld that position. So I guess the question I have for you is, as Liz Truss takes office, forms her government, what are you kind of watching out for?
Well, I believe in terms of foreign policy, she's going to continue a very hawkish British reaction to the war in Ukraine. She's going to follow Boris Johnson's lead with enthusiastic support of President Zelensky. I think more British military supplies will be coming to the Ukrainians as they become available for the Britons to ship them. She will be continuing this hawkish policy because she has been an ardent proponent of it in her former role as foreign secretary.
Ralph Carter is a political science professor at Texas Christian University, located in Fort Worth, Texas. Ralph, thank you.
Okay, glad to help.
A new report finds that Russia is still finding buyers for its oil, gas, and coal. This is even after Western sanctions affecting it over the invasion of Ukraine. From the Associated Press, Jennifer King has that story.
The Helsinki-based Center for Research on Energy and Clean Air reports that overall export volumes of fossil fuels from Russia dropped by 18% since the invasion of Ukraine, but revenues have been rebounding due to surging prices. While Moscow has reduced flows of natural gas and Europe has managed to cut imports by 35%, Russia received about 158 billion euros in revenue for fossil fuels from February to August, with about half going to Europe and 22% to the single biggest importer, China. The center has warned against exaggerating the rise in imports to China and India, but their report today does find Russia has been sending significantly more coal and crude oil to Asia and Middle Eastern nations over the summer. The center suggests leveraging EU shipping capacity to press for a price cap on Russian oil. Jennifer King, Washington.
From the very start of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, veterinarians in the city of Khmelnytsky have been saving animals that were hurt in dangerous frontline areas. Anna Rice narrates the story.
This German Shepherd was wounded while doing its job helping Ukrainian fighters on the front lines. Only a while ago, veterinarians here at the Khmelnytsky Military Hospital of Veterinary Medicine were fighting for the dog's life. Now he's healthy and ready to go back to serving his country.
I can't think of things we haven't treated lately. And I'm not only talking about service animals, dogs of all breeds. I'm also talking about pets of the displaced civilians and animals that live in the park.
Head physician at this military hospital, Kirill Chumakov, has been treating and saving animals for over three decades. Since 2018, he has run the veterinary hospital of the Ukrainian National Police. Since the February 24th Russian invasion, all animals are welcome. Hospital workers have already helped more than 5,000 animals. 3,500 of them are pets of displaced civilians. But there have also been camels and horses, all evacuated from the Kyiv and Kharkiv regions into the relative calm of Khmelnytsky.
Locals found it very amusing that there are camels walking around Khmelnytsky, and I just smile. I can smile now because we've saved them all, we've treated them, and they've moved on to the rehabilitation center.
25 people work in this hospital. Some of them travel to the east of the country every now and then to to try to help on the spot. In the most difficult cases, they bring patients here to Khmelnytsky.
When we were in Bucha, two small girls brought us a baby fox, all burned. We took it with us, brought it to Khmelnytsky, called it Bucha, and she still lives here with us.
When the city of Bucha is restored, and if things go according to plan, the fox will have a home at a special park for injured animals.
That's my job. I'm a vet. Animals are not to blame. They live near the front lines and are suffering because of the war.
After they come back from another call for help, vets only get to spend a little time at home before they head out again.
At times, there are days when we don't even go to sleep. At times, we come home and sleep for 24 hours straight. That's just how we work, 24/7.
Their work is hard, but seeing wounded animals get healthy again makes all of it worthwhile. For Tatiana Kukurika in Khmelnytsky, Ukraine, NRI's VOA News.
And finally, volunteers across Ukraine are doing everything that they can to help protect their homeland against Russia. One unique and influential blogger is using his star power to help purchase military equipment for Ukraine. Anna Kosturchenko has that story to round us out.
Hello, you metal pilgrims, and welcome to the new episode on the channel about one of the greatest heavy metal albums of all times.
Vladislav Stadnik has been vlogging about heavy metal for over 3 years.
Today, here you go.
Every week he shares with his YouTube fans interviews with rock legends, like Rob Halford of the band Judas Priest.
It's interesting how one track can make so many big things happen.
Vladislav's blog has tens of thousands of US subscribers, he says. When he was younger, he studied economics in Boston, and after he graduated, he stayed in the US for work. Russia's annexation of Crimea in 2014 changed Stadnik's career plans. He returned to Ukraine and never regretted his decision.
Ask yourself, if someone starts bombing your country, will you run elsewhere or will you stay and defend it? Will you surrender? No, you will fight. It is impossible to understand that until you hear the first air raid siren.
To help the Ukrainian army in the first month of the war, Stadnik started a fund he called Steel Wings. The fund helps supply the military with protective equipment, and Stadnik is using his blogging power to help.
Of my donations, you know, from abroad are actually coming because I'm a blogger and because I'm, you know, somewhat known in the heavy metal circles in the United States and the United Kingdom and in several other countries.
Sometimes when there is a big goal, Stadnik can quickly raise the funds needed from his audience.
We needed a huge lot of money, which none of us had, and yet we were able to raise them within just hours.
Stadnik says his audience values freedom and is driven to help Ukraine protect it.
Freedom of speech? Freedom of living your life the way you want to live to. And, you know, this is the fundamentals of heavy metal. And that's why the heavy metal community is so supportive.
The Steel Wings charity supplies the Ukrainian army with things like bulletproof vests, drones, and cars for the front lines. The work never stops. Ukrainians who volunteer for other funds help Stadnik with logistics.
There's some military stuff here. Like, these are actually our helmets that we purchased.
Volunteering takes a lot of time, so often Stadnik's young daughter joins him.
My dream is for the war to end.
And Stadnik and his team work hard to make the dream a reality. Anna Kostyuchenko for VOA News, Kyiv, Ukraine.
And that's going to do it for us today. There's more information online at voanews.com, where you'll find the latest developments not only in Ukraine, but on news and events from around the world. There's also additional information on our social media feeds. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire team at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.